Following is a Journey into Comics Network production.
Hey, what's up? This is Tyler from Podcastrophy, and you're listening to the Best of the Week. Highlights from all the shows that aired on the network this past week. Kick back, relax, don't tread on my heritage, and enjoy.
Piss off, ghost!
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Journey into Comics.
My band, Walk Among Us, had a show in Chicago. We played The Mutiny. Hit the pop filter. Fuck, that was cool. So we play The Mutiny, right? And it's a punk rock dive bar, but it's kind of like the energy and the vibe of the room is beautiful. I just can't really describe it. You can tell that there's been love and music really poured into that building. And maybe like not every show has been great, and maybe not all the musicians have been phenomenal. But there have been some people that have been in the building that have just like poured certain energy that as a musician you pick up on, you know. So we're hanging out all day, getting prepped for the show and like trying to just get our heads in the game and stuff. And I'm like, oh, fuck me. I forgot to do the Best of the Week show, you know, which is our show where we do all the highlights and shit. So I'm like, all right, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? What do I do? Okay, I'll just fucking do it. That's cool. It's not a big deal. I can do it. I'm a pro. I know what I'm doing. So I just sit down. I get to work. I do it. I put everything together. I, you know, add the new show, Kids for Sale, in their first 10 minutes of their show so people can get a feel for it. And shout out to them every other Friday. They're kicking ass, you know, and can't wait to hear what else they bring to the table here in the near future, as well as another new show debuting, or not debuting, they debuted a couple Wednesdays ago, but their next episode's coming out this Wednesday, Adulting Ain't Easy, and it's fun. It's not trying to just plug all this shit. Anyways, I lost my train of thought. So anyways, I'm doing the Best of the Week, right? Finish that up, and then it's like, fuck, I gotta make the set list for the evening. I kind of have like a, it's a methodical thing. It just kind of is a consistency, right? So before every show, I print the set a certain way with, like, it's very much branded as our thing. And it's very obviously a Walk Among Us set list, the way we present it. At the very bottom, I always put all the, like, kind of important stats, what bands were on the card, what the date was, where the venue is, what the venue was. You know, important shit like that. And then maybe once in a while you'll get shit like we debuted a full album where we did all of Static Age or we did all of Earth AD. And that information will be somewhere on the bottom of the set just to let me know as a reminder if I'm going back through and looking like, oh, I remember we did that fucking show, because I kind of got a terrible memory, especially with the amount of shows we've been playing and like the vibes of all the places. You play so many rooms. And me being the drummer, I only really see the back of, like, fucking Rob's head. Sometimes I get to see, like, V or Sarah from that angle as well. But, like, it just depends on where we're set up on stage, you know? So I get everything done before we're having to go to the Mutiny. That includes tearing all the gear down and whatnot. And I have all the gear tore down. And it hits me. Ooh, that was a loud bang. I think people are putting out fireworks right now. Crazy. That or there's a war in my backyard. I'm not sure. I don't even know if you guys heard that. We'll see. Maybe not. People can be like, what the fuck is he talking about? There was like a loud noise. And a train of our existence, like back to back. Damn, it's just like Interruption City. This is the, hey, Nate, can you finish your thought story, right? So anyways. Okay. So I get done doing all the things I need to do. And bam. Motherfucking migraine, man. And you guys know, I get them. They're fucking terrible. If you are out there, you're listening to this podcast, you're like, man, I get migraines too. I'm so sorry that you have to ever experience that pain. And I don't even, you might somehow be my worst fucking enemy. And if you are my worst fucking enemy, then you know who you are. I'm talking directly to you right now. I still feel sorry that you get migraines too, whoever you are. I don't know if that might be a made-up person, because I don't know if I have any enemies like that. Like, I'm not sure, but I'm just saying anybody could be listening, and it doesn't matter. Migraines are terrible. So I get the early startings of my migraine, and it's like in my temples. It's in the back of my eyes, and it's like swell. I mean, it was just like everything was swelling up in my head. The pressure is just building and building. So Veronica's like, hey, take some fucking ibuprofen, man. Like, get a brain in your skull. And I was like, oh, that's very smart. I should do that. So I take some ibuprofen. I'm drinking some water. I do everything I can to my preventative measure to prevent this migraine. And by the time we have to leave, I still have it. And we're leaving to go to the show. And now I have to drive. And I'm like, okay, I could fucking do this, right? So we get on 8094 and we're driving to the Mutiny. And we go, we take 94 all the way up into the city, all the way to Fullerton slash, it starts with a Western, Fullerton slash Western. It's like 47A. We turn in right and we're like pretty much right the fuck there at the Mutiny. And I'm like trying to find parking and I fucking miss it. And then I find parking and it's cool. We get there, we lock in, we're waiting. We see Rob, Sarah, and Rob's sister Mandy is with Rob and Sarah. And they're in tow in the second vehicle that we always take. And they finally lock in and get parking. And we go in real quick. We make it known that we're here. And train of our existence is like, motherfuckers, hear me now. Anyways, so we let them know that we're there. And then it's time to load in. Now, I told everybody, like, hey, you're going to fucking use my drums. I'm cool with that. Like, let's let that happen. Because no one's going to fuck with them that bad, right? I'll set them up. They'll leave them the fuck alone. It'll be cool. I was wrong. I was severely wrong, but that's okay. It didn't fuck up things too bad, and overall, all in all, the night was really great. So, and I'm going to talk about that. It's weird because I've never really freely got to discuss like my thoughts and interactions while being in Walk Among Us, and some of the things that go on at a show from my perspective. And I don't know. Maybe you guys will find this interesting. I know this is Journey into Comics. We've got tons of comic book news today, guys. I'm just trying to bring you into the light, give you some of my story right now, right? So we get to the venue, we get all our shit in, we use this cart. It's this big-ass cart, and the lady's like, look, do me a favor. When you're coming in and out of the door, use the inside of the cart to push. And I'm like, oh, tight space. She goes, yeah, you will lose a finger. And when I got over there, I totally understood that it was like very, if you were pushing hard and fast, That sounded very terrible. But if you were going quickly through the door and had your hands on the outside rail while trying to go through that door frame, you would rip your fucking fingers off, no doubt, and it would be very painful. So we get the shit in, and I start setting my drums up and interacting with some of the other bands, man, and they're really nice fellas. There's a band, Stay Up All Night and Fight. They were a lot of fun, high-energy pop-punk sound. Their drummer was just really, he kind of had like this vivacious energy. Very nice guy, Sean. I remember you, Sean, with an EAN. So, we're all interacting, and then like Eddie, not Eric, sorry, I fucked that up on stage. I was a little, we're getting there. Again, remember, I'm there, still migraine. Okay, I forgot to also mention that. So like, I still have a migraine. I'm like, this fucking sucks. Okay, so I am interacting with everybody. I meet Eddie from Eddie and the Arsons, and he's a nice dude, and he's super just like very down to earth and chill and very matter of fact talking about his story, and he's very interesting dude. I want to try to get him on the Voice of Survival podcast at some point. He's a cool dude, and like I said, his story is pretty interesting, how the band he has now came to be and how it wasn't until it was. So anyways, we're standing around for fucking ever. Like, we had all our shit ready and to like to go and whatnot. Like, I had all my cymbal stands fucking set up, and even on stage, because people were like, can we use your cymbal stands too? And I was like, sure, that's fucking cool, I don't mind. So I have all that shit up on stage, and you know, we're standing around, and it's like, we're supposed to be on stage performing at 11, by the way. I want to note that it was like, the show starts at 9, we should be playing by 11 based on the time frame of the other bands. Also, time should be cut down because, well, the drum kit's already there and set up. You just fucking go and play, right? So, and I'm saying so a lot today, guys. Fuck, I'm going to have a complex about that now. You guys are going to be like, hey, Nate, stop fucking saying so And if that's a problem, just like message. I would love to hear some feedback. It's weird because we've been doing Journey into Comics for 194 episodes. In the very beginning, we had some feedback from some folks. Tim Wright, shout out to you. I know you're still listening. I think about you often, my brother. I miss you very much. I'm glad you have a Facebook now, and we can communicate that way. And I'm glad that, yes, welcome into the life. I'm glad you're there now, finally, because now we can interact a little bit easier, and you can see what the fuck's going on. That's great. So there was some interaction in the beginning of this show, and then it's like we kind of went on our own journey.
From the suburbs of Chicago and Illinois, this is The Poor Report with your host, Andrew Poor.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 41 of The Poor Report. 41 episodes, that is something. Definitely not something I actually ever expected getting to. 41 is, it's not that far from 50, really, when you get down to it. There's definitely a lot of episodes behind me. It's hard to believe we're getting close to that 1 year mark. But 50 episodes is going to be exciting. I know there's some stuff in the works. And I was thinking about what to do for 41, and my life's been kind of hectic as Liz and I get near to our home closing and that next phase of our lives. And for those of you who tune into other shows on the network, you'll know that Liz and I have a show together called Adulting Ain't Easy, which I appreciate you guys listening to our pilot. And then the episode 2 is actually going to be dropping tomorrow for those who are listening to today's episode. So definitely check that out. It's also on the social medias at Adulting's Hard on Facebook and Twitter. So we'll be having links to those and some comments. And I think once our lives get a little more on track, we'll definitely be more active on social media. Or at least I will be. But I just really appreciate those of you who checked us out. I know we've got a lot of listens and a lot of Facebook activities. So definitely great news there. But when I try to think about this episode, there's a lot that needs to be covered and a lot I wanted to cover, but just time has just been kind of getting away from me. So I decided, instead of tackling the massive Trump news from the past week, that I was going to do a Trump-free episode. We don't have those very often. I think if you took all of the episodes I've done, Trump's probably in 90% of them. Maybe between 75 and 90% of them he's in. So it's kind of nice to maybe have an episode that we're getting away from it. I mean, there'll be some talk of the White House, and the Poor Four for this week has some fun info, but yeah, I just wanted to keep it pretty easy, pretty straightforward, keep it kind of loosed this week, and then there'll be some more fun news next week, so I'm probably going to record another episode in the next day or two that we'll talk about that'll drop next Tuesday, just because between now and then, my week's going to get even more hectic as because once we close, there's a lot of housework and yard work and all that stuff that'll need to be done. So definitely a lot going on, but I want to make sure you still get an episode from me and more news that's going on. And it might be a follow-up episode to stuff that I've covered previously, like the whatever happened to that 30-year-old kid who was court-ordered to move out of his parents' house, or what's going on with the volcano, or what's going on in Santa Fe and Stoneman Douglas. So just probably some follow-up, and I'll probably be recording that the next day or two, which will be up early on Patreon for those of you who subscribe for $1 for early access, or you can get access to some exclusive content for $3, and that's at patreon.com/journeyintocomics. But that's enough plugs and talk about me. Let's kind of get into the news for this week. And I think one of the things that was surprising to me was involving the White House. And that's probably the closest I'm going to get to Trump on this week's episode. And that is, there's a White House Bible study for the first time in like over 100 years. A White House Bible study is being led by a pastor who is anti-gay, anti-women, and anti-Catholic. And as a Catholic myself, that's kind of disconcerting. So the first Bible study group held for the U.S. cabinet in at least 100 years is led by a pastor who believes homosexuality is illegitimate, who doesn't believe women should preach, and has described Catholicism as a false religion. 10 members of the cabinet, including Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, and Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, sponsor the study group, which holds meetings lasting between an hour and 90 minutes every Wednesday, according to BBC News. It unfolds at a location in Washington, D.C. that is kept secret for security reasons. Its leader is Ralph Drollinger, a pastor and president of Capital Ministries, an organization which aims to evangelize elected officials and lead them toward maturity in Christ. The 63-year-old former pro basketball player from California founded Capital Ministries with his wife in 1996 to offer prayer groups, Bible study meetings, and private ministry to politicians. It now operates in 43 state capitals and over 20 locations outside of the U.S. The outspoken pastor sparked controversy for his views on women, same-sex relationships, and Catholicism. Arguing that women and men have different roles, he claimed in the BBC News interview, "There's a prohibition of female leadership in marriage and female leadership in the church, and those are clear in Scripture. It doesn't mean in an egalitarian sense that a woman is of lesser importance." And earlier this year, in a Bible study session released on the Capital Ministries website, he said, "Homosexuality and same-sex ceremonies are illegitimate in God's eyes. His word is repetitive, perspicuous," which clearly expressed, "and stayed on the subject." Those comments come after he wrote in a Bible study addressed in the U.S. Capitol in 2013, "Not only is homosexuality and same-sex marriage voided by God and his word, but biology as well castigates homosexuality and same-sex marriage. The ultimate outcome is the discontinuation of the species since homosexualities cannot procreate. For sure, one cannot be homosexual and an evolutionist at the same time." In 2004, Drollinger was criticized for declaring Catholicism is one of the primary false religions of the world. As a result, progressive campaigners have objected to Drollinger's regular meetings with high-ranking U.S. politicians and fear the influence he could have on their political outlook. Asked whether he tells his students how to vote, Drollinger told BBC News that he will put the blueprint on the engineer's seat on the train, which will show the right tracks to the station. Well, that sounds kind of interesting. "But I'm going to tell you what tracks to take, but you've got to be pretty stupid not to follow the blueprint because it's there." In a statement, the LGBT activist nonprofit The Human Rights Campaign called Drollinger an extremist. "People look to their faith as a source of guidance and inspiration. LGBTQ people and our family and friends are no different," the group said. Drollinger's influence and involvement in the current administration is not only driving a wedge between faith communities and the LGBTQ community, but is turning back the clock on progress with the spread of even more divisive rhetoric throughout the highest ranking of governments. Jessica Stern, the executive director of LGBT advocacy nonprofit Outright Action International, told Newsweek, "Make no mistake, there is no mere study group. The organization has targeted American government officials, so it is, by definition, sought to blur the line between church and state. Their anti-woman and anti-LGBTQ view matters because the highest levels of American government are listening to them. Members of the president's cabinet must immediately withdraw their sponsorship of this organization." The representatives of the North America region of the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans, and Intersex Association. I've never heard of intersex before. That's a new one for me. "We have concerns that the administration is willing to accept counsel from individuals who are hostile towards the LGBTQ community. There are many faith leaders to whom the administration can receive counsel who are inclusive and do not discriminate against any community. Many people who identify as LGBTQ are spiritual and religious people, and the fact that the president is surrounded by people who seek religious counsel from an exclusionary and hateful person is problematic. The president should require his cabinet to open the religious studies to more inclusionary groups and individuals." The White House and Capitol Ministries did not respond to a request for comment. So that's a little interesting. I'm very much for the separation of church and state. I think holding a Bible study group within the White House or with White House administration on government grounds is a little bit much. It's tricky. Everyone is definitely willing to have the pastor they want, the religious figure that they want to go to or want to speak from. And this could even be a very different group if, say, Mike Pence was leading the group as opposed to someone who a lot of people in their eyes view as an extremist or, like the article says, anti-gay, anti-women, and anti-Catholic. So, I don't know, it's just weird. And I think the headline says more than the article really does. Because if they were going to a church with the same guy there, it probably wouldn't be, even though they're getting the same counsel from someone like him, it wouldn't be as big news as it being a White House-associated Bible study. And I've attended Bible studies. They're great for you if you want to learn more about certain topics in the Bible or just have that sense of community and insight into, at least in myself and with Catholicism or really whatever religion you aspire to, and if you're no religion at all. Well, I guess if you're no religion at all, you wouldn't be having a Bible study, so that's kind of a mute point. So that's what I thought was kind of interesting, and there's not really a good segue out of that But we can kind of keep it in the DC area and go to the next article, which is kind of appropriate given how close we are to Memorial Day, which was last week. And that is Arlington Cemetery, nearly full and may become more exclusive. To preserve space for future war heroes in the country's premier national cemetery, the Army is considering new rules that would turn away many currently eligible veterans. I've actually been to Arlington National Cemetery. I went there a few years back when I visited D.C. for a family reunion. It's a very powerful place to visit. It's just, it'll put you on your knees how just the sheer amount of people who are laid to rest there and go to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier and the changing of the guard and all that. It's definitely a powerful scene. During our tour, you kind of take a guided tour, you kind of get a little, like, tram car. There's a couple cars lined up, and there's kind of a tour guide who talks about it, and not overly loud because it is a place of rest for a lot of people. And back to Adulting Ain't Easy, a podcast we came up with a few weeks ago, and now you're on episode one. We made it through the pilot, and you liked it, which is exciting.
Yes, no kidding.
Like 50 downloads, which is really impressive for a show that had no prior following. We didn't give it a huge social media push, and we got all these likes on Facebook already. People just must relate to the idea, and I know once our lives die down, we might do some more social media, doing maybe the Instagram thing or posting pictures on Twitter. I have the social media on Facebook and Twitter up. Maybe I'll have to do it. Because
I'm not too much into that. I'm more of the stalker. So, yeah, it wouldn't work out too well.
Right. You're not even an admin on the... I didn't have you as an admin on the Facebook.
I know. What the heck?
I gotta add you still. It's fine. Oh, and just FYI, because I'm going to forget. Hashtag is adulting's hard.
Well, that's silly.
And my computer seems to be doing weird things, but we're going to keep rolling away. Hopefully it'll snap out of whatever it's doing. We don't lose this part of the audio.
Yeah.
Oh, we're good.
To see.
We're fine. Oh, it recorded good. It. I can cut off the pause.
That's nice. Technology is just a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Technology's one thing, and you stare at a computer all day at work, and then you go home, and you make dinner, and then you put the laptop back out and get back into it.
Oh, yay.
And we actually had Mexican for date night tonight.
Yeah, so normally... I mean, I don't know what you do for lunch, but normally we have, at my house, since I still live at home, we do home-cooked meals almost every night of the work week, but when I come here, it's a little different.
Yeah, usually, depending on how the week is, we get together at least once a week at night after work and do date night, do dinner, and then watch our shows or watch a movie or whatever we end up doing, and now we're recording episodes. Yay, date night. But for this week... since I had time and it sounded kind of good, I decided to do Mexican. So, usually I get the frozen taquitos from the grocery store just because I don't feel like making taquitos.
Because we don't have time. I mean, once, I feel like when it comes to making certain specific foods, it just takes forever. And I'm sure that taquitos normally may not take that long, but we just did not have the time to do that.
Yeah, once we live together and actually have to plan meals for the week and actually get into the full cooking mode, we'll probably take care of it then. But for the meantime, it's just easier to do some things homemade and some things just from the box. So this week, since we did Mexican, I actually made homemade salsa and homemade queso, which is very nice.
Yeah, if you don't know Andrew, he is a salsa fanatic. Like, literally, he made a whole... blender's worth. Like, he had a small little, like, food processor, and I'm like, okay, that's, like, an acceptable amount of salsa. Oh, no, that was out for show, and then he gets out his blender, and he just starts stuffing all this stuff in there. I'm like, are you really gonna eat all of that?
Oh, I will. I have to get more chips, because the chip to... But if I don't, I can always just add some other stuff to it and make gazpacho out of it, because gazpacho is... It's a cold soup that's delicious, and it's basically salsa.
I don't know about cold soup, though.
Yeah.
I've never had gazpacho, so I wouldn't know.
Yeah, I saw it as an appetizer option for the wedding, and I was like, yes, do it, want it. In a bowl that you can eat?
Definitely. It's worth a shot, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that's one of Andrew's things that he likes to make on his own is salsa. Because with salsa, when it comes to Andrew, he's very picky about it because there's always something wrong with it.
Well, we actually, over Memorial Day weekend, there was a salsa that was brought over for a gathering at Liz's house that was, I think, the perfect consistency for me because it was, I like restaurant style salsa where it's nice and thin. I don't like the just big chunk, but this one was, it was finely blended, so there wasn't any discernible chunks, but it was still thick enough that it didn't slide off the plate when you're eating it. I was like, I want this recipe, and apparently the person who makes it doesn't really follow a recipe, so each iteration is always a little bit different, so unfortunately I can't recreate it, but sometimes you get hit or miss, especially when you go to like Mexican restaurants. Sometimes you get the ones where it's, oh, it's really good, but it's really thin and it's brown for some reason.
See, and I'm the opposite when it comes to salsa. Like, I really like the Tostitos is like my favorite because it's all chunky and hearty, but I mean, I'm not too picky with salsa because I'm more of a guac girl, so.
All right, and that's something that you've made before. I've never made guac on my own.
It's a process. I never season it on my own. I always use those little packets, which are super nice because I'm lazy and I don't have time to measure out and get all the fancy spices. So that's always a nice thing to do with guac. But Jewel Osco does it right. I mean, I've never really had a bad guacamole made by them, so I just stick with them. If I'm really, really motivated, like if I'm going to like a gathering or something, I may pull out like a guacamole recipe, but a lot of the times it's just like, right, I'm too tired, I don't have enough time, let me just go through the Jewel Osco, check out at the counter and leave.
Right, and I feel like anytime that you make guac yourself, it turns brown within like an hour.
Yeah, and I've tried some of those like, oh, keep the pit in the guacamole, oh, try this, oh, try that. I'm not successful. I don't know if it's because I'm not a good cook or if it's just because I'm not doing something right. Right. Who knows? And that's why I don't make guac. I just buy it from the store.
Right. It's cheap, and it's most of the time it's cheaper to buy it than to make it yourself. By the time you buy all the ingredients and avocado, and I don't know when a good avocado. I'm not one of those millennials that does avocado toast or whatever that weird bullshit is.
I don't know if it's necessarily bullshit. I just have no idea how to make it, and I don't know. I'm not a big egg person, so I don't know if mixing avocados and eggs for me would be that great.
I had one interesting thing that someone brought into work one time. They did avocado deviled eggs. So, like, you know, typically you make deviled eggs, you hard boil the egg, and then you scoop out the yolk, and then you add whatever you do and blend it up, and then add it back to the egg whites. So this time you just throw, like, I think an avocado or two in that yolk mix, and then you put it on there. So you know, but essentially green eggs, so I guess you could do if you were a school teacher and did green eggs and ham, but I don't know, it wasn't bad, but I feel like the avocado taste and the egg taste are very complementary, so nothing really stands out.
Yeah, I don't know.
But, I don't know, but sometimes our day nights are pretty I think last week, what did we do last week for dinner?
Last week we went all out. We actually made something from scratch because we did we found a recipe online and it was for...
Oh, it's from that tasty video.
Yeah, it's the chicken and the cherry tomatoes and the
green beans,
which when I tell people what kind of chicken it is, I didn't realize this was like, people didn't have it. And I guess I didn't either until Andrew found it at the grocery store. But it uses boneless chicken thighs, I think it was skinless too, right? Boneless, no, skinless chicken thigh?
I think it was just boneless. They had some skin on it.
But I've never heard of it before, and I thought it was crazy. And apparently I'm not alone, which is nice, because the only time I've really seen chicken thighs are when they're whole in the bone. So it was kind of interesting when Andrew brought out these boneless.
Right, you definitely...
I didn't know what was going on. I was very confused for a second.
Yeah, definitely when you're at the grocery store, it is kind of still unknown. And like, when you're cooking it, it kind of... I feel like they just ripped the bone out of it, because as you're cooking it, it kind of... Because you just put some oil in a pan and then just cook it, and it starts to kind of... You can kind of unroll it a little bit, because it kind of has... It's kind of shaped around the bone it was in, so as you cook it, it kind of opens up, and it allows you to get kind of butterflied almost. But it worked out pretty well. It worked good. You cooked it all in shifts, so you cooked the chicken, you set it aside, you cut it up, then you add... I think you just add a little bit of water and the green beans, back into the pan that has the chicken grease and everything left over in it. Let that cook for a minute. You chop up the tomatoes. You add the chicken and tomatoes back into it, and you cook it until the tomatoes kind of burst a little bit so you can get some more of that flavor. And then you just spoon it on, add some seasoning, and then put it onto a plate, and you're good. And it was delicious. You just got to make sure you guys get the green beans. They're not super crunchy because you got to do fresh green beans, not from a can or frozen.
We're going to fuck the sodomites in the...
Hello and welcome to Podcastrophy, episode 40. I'm your host, Dick. My co-host, Tyler, hates me.
God, you're a piece of shit. We have a mystery guest today.
Yeah.
I've been hyping this up now for like a day and a half, 2 days.
Just to piss off Blaine.
Just to piss you off that I had a guess that you weren't allowed to know who it was. And you guessed who it was immediately. I was just really good at not letting you know who it was.
That's okay. You're like... Yeah, I started making guesses, and you're like, there's a good chance I'm not going to tell you even if you guess it. I'm like, okay. I just assumed, you know, you wouldn't bring anybody on here that I would just was just a piece of shit.
I am so not a raper.
Instead, you did bring a piece of shit, but yeah, at least he's a piece of shit that I like.
He's a good piece of shit.
He's a piece of shit that I like. So
he fits in well with us.
You guys have heard him before on Journey into Wrestling. He's back for Podcastrophy, and I'm going to be living in his house in a month.
That's
and,
right, tenant.
welcome, Joe.
Hey.
Talk into the microphone, Joe.
Into the microphone.
That's how microphones work.
I'm a drummer. I don't use microphones.
Yeah, I know. You don't do
the
much.
It's okay as drummer.
But think about this, though. The mic stand is a stick. So you should know at least like how to. You should at least know what to do with that.
Okay.
Like,
all right.
You know how to hold a stick.
Okay. How the hell you doing, Joe?
Do we go into that now?
No.
We go into that in a bit.
We got to get the pleasantries.
You know.
Over
you know how I'm doing.
You know how I do. You know how I'm doing.
He was like a belligerent Blaine or Bane there for a second.
You know how I'm doing. What does a belligerent Blaine look like?
That.
I'm belligerent.
With a
like
leather hat.
30% of the time.
Right.
Just 30.
Statistics.
But, yeah.
So, real quick, before we get into topics, I've been doing this poll thing with Podcastrophy.
Which you were quite pissed off at me
last week, I got my ass fucking kicked. And you're never going to let me forget it, but...
I haven't. Have I brought it up?
No, but you're never going to let me forget it. This week, I just did a simple one. Hey, Podcastrophy peeps, who's the better sidekick here? And you had a choice between Chewie and Groot. Both great choices. My vote was Chewie. I think a good portion of pretty much everybody else voted for Groot. But Chewie ended up winning.
Yep.
58-42 out of 67 votes.
You can't beat a classic.
No, well... Groot is also a classic character, but...
No one knows him outside of the fame he's received in the last 4 years.
Fans of the comic know who Groot is.
So, like, a whole 200 people.
Oh. There's more than 200 people that follow
I know,
that
I'm talking
series.
Shit.
But still, you know... The thing about this one is there's not a bad choice, either way.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I posted it, because... Obviously, Chewie's an iconic character. You know, he's Han's number two guy.
AJ, former guest, hopeful future guest again, says, fuck that twig little bitch.
Well, I mean, that's the same sentiments that I have, but, you know, Chewie's an iconic character. That motherfucker rips people's arms off. But Groot also takes his spiny, thorny stick arm
and just rams it through people.
Impales like seven dudes at the same time.
Yeah,
so,
no shit.
And, you know, he sacrifices himself for everybody else.
Am I saying that Chewie would beat Groot in hand-to-hand combat? Fuck no.
I don't think Chewie could beat Groot.
No. Oh, hell no. Not even close. But if I were to pick as a sidekick, I would definitely pick Chewie.
Yeah, I think you've got to.
You'd want to die.
See, that's the other thing. People keep saying that Chewie let Han die. Chewie did not let Han
no.
die. Chewie expected Han... What? You've seen The Force Awakens.
Okay. All right.
Chewie didn't expect Ben to kill his dad. Chewie knew Ben as a child. Like, that's as much Chewie's nephew as it is anything. And it's like, if anybody can bring him back, it's Han, you know? And they have that exchange, and the whole time Chewie's working. Chewie's fucking putting bombs up places. And then he just happens to come in at the end, right before Ben fucking stabs him, and it's like, you see that fucking agonizing howl that he lets out.
Yeah.
Which is that in itself is very fucking powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's not many times throughout Star Wars, of any iteration, whether it's comics, books, the movies, cartoons, anything, that you really see a lot of emotion from Chewie other than anger and, like, sarcasm.
Sarcasm in quotations.
Right,
like,
I mean, because you never know what he's saying.
Yeah.
But when he fucking howls like that, that is real fucking emotion.
Jennifer waved.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hey, Jennifer.
So, Jessica, yeah, I mean, I think...
Whatever her name is now.
Chewie had to get the win.
Yeah.
So,
and you know, right after he let out that howl, he just went ham.
Yeah, he fucking tried to kill Ben.
He's like, "Fuck you!"
Yeah, I mean, but it's just like what I said. Ben is like Chewie's nephew, essentially.
Yeah, I was about to bring that up. I'm so glad that you basically called him Uncle Chewie, and he's like that friend of your dad's that's always around.
Yeah.
And, like, and I got a bunch of those.
Yeah, I do, too.
I got so many of those. Like,
especially,
what's up, Uncle Marty?
Growing up in a military family,
yeah.
I have a shit ton of those guys.
And, yeah, mine are just a bunch of drunk guys that
mine are too.
Hung out and played softball with them.
That goes hand in hand. But, you know, fucking Chewie's like, you not only betrayed your dad and your family, but you betrayed me because even though you were doing wrong, I had hope that...
Bruh.
I had hoped that fucking Han could bring him back, and you did the ultimate thing that you should not do. If Chewie was down there, he probably would have ripped his arms off. So.
That's the go-to.
I mean, what else are you going to do if you're a Wookiee? You rip people's arms off and you fuck shit up.
Beat people to death.
With their arms.
With their own arms. You're right. I have a request for next week.
What's that?
Can we... get a table. Like, do you have a cardboard table?
A cardboard table?
Card table, yeah. What the fuck? Sorry. It's been a long day.
I haven't even
fucked up yet.
No, Joe hasn't fucked up.
That's
what the fuck's your excuse?
It was a long day.
Hey, fuck yourself, pal.
You didn't go through half the shit that we went through.
Who did I work with today?
Oh, no, here we go.
I worked with Dave and Chris.
Cool.
Oh, holy shit.
So I was bored off my ass all day.
We worked with Tiffany and Doris, so fuck yourself.
I get it.
And
yours is way worse.
And I had to work with
yours
Eddie.
Is way worse. I concede that.
And yet I have not fucked up yet.
It's okay. We all have our moments. But yeah, we need a table so we can not put our mics on it.
Oh, just have the table.
Yes,
there.
We'll just have it as a set piece. Since Aaron Sperling has such a hard on for tables, and he thinks our show needs a table.
What's wrong with holding... I mean, it's... Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get into that.
We can.
Get into a table.
I have no issue getting into it.
I don't want to.
We could just...
But no, he seriously, like... He went and commented on, like, another post from... in Nerds in the Roundtable. And it's just more table jokes. It's like...
We could have one just to put Wayne through. And just just for wearing
your
hat.
Yeah, fuck your hat.
Your hat.
I will have to say this. As much as I dislike Flash, Zoom is a badass villain. Like, all of the speedster villains are really cool.
Yes, Zoom and Reverse Flash. Reverse Flash is one of my favorite villains of all time.
I really dig Zoom, so.
Ooh, hello.
Podcast faux pas.
I don't know what the fuck that was.
My phone.
Sonic?
Come on. I knew where it was from. I did not know what it was.
Ah,
yeah. I did not.
Patronize me, gal.
Sonic rings. Come on, man.
I did not.
You're listening to the Voice of Survival podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Nate Phillips.
today joining me is a fellow member of the Journey into Comics Network. You folks know her mainly from Foodies Watching Movies. She also debuted a new show called Brews with Babes during our April Fool's Week. She's my good friend, who I've known officially a year, I think we just discussed. Yeah. Welcome to the show, Lauren. How's it going?
It's going good.
So, do you remember the first time we met?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to go a little from my perspective, and then I want to bounce back to the other side of this. So, Veronica's moving, obviously.
Yeah.
And she's got a dresser. And she's like, I want to just get rid of this fucking thing. I hate it. I don't want it around me. Like, I don't... It just
Even though it's a beautiful piece.
Yeah, but it's just bad vibes, right?
Yeah.
And you know how that goes. So, she, I think, put it on Facebook or something. Like, I'm trying to get rid of this dresser.
Yeah, but I feel like she messaged me and just kind of, like, asked me specifically if I wanted it.
That might have been the fact, because maybe you had mentioned to her, like, didn't you guys have breakfast or something, like, right around that same time, too?
And I told her that I really needed a dresser.
So, she's like, hey, when you go home tonight, can you do me a small favor? And I was like, yes, like, of course I will. I'll do anything for you. What can I do? And she goes, okay, well, I need you to drop this dresser off at my friend's house. And I was like, okay, cool. It's pretty heavy, so I'm going to need your help getting it downstairs. Her and I carry it downstairs. We load it into the truck. And we hang out for a bit, and then I go on my way to your location. Have it in my GPS. Now, it was a long day. We had been moving stuff and doing other things in the lead up to this. So, like, my end goal was just, like, I'm going to come home. I'm going to take off my fucking shoes. I might smoke a little bit of weed and just chill out, you know, and just forget about my stupid, dumbass day. So, that's my mindset when I'm driving to your house. And, okay, so I get there and I'm like, okay, cool. So, I knock on the door and I don't think anybody heard me, or I wasn't really sure what the situation was. So, I'm like, okay. So, I get back in the truck. I text V. I'm like, hey, I'm here. Can you let your friend know that I'm, like, chilling out back here, just hanging kind of in my truck? And it was, like, probably another 4 or 5 minutes, and then you came out. And I was like, hi. And I realized that you had a cane, and I was like, okay, you're not going to be able to help me move a fucking thing. No. Like, there's no way. So it's so incredible, though, that I was, even though it sucked, fortunate enough to have an experience of, like, moving furniture as a job. So I immediately went into, like, what would I do in this situation anywhere else?
You got a blanket.
Mode.
You got a blanket.
Use a blanket. It just fucking slide the thing. It was genius. It was perfect. It was so cramped in your room, though. I was like, oh my God. It was because you had, like, no space between your bed and the fucking dresser, and you had to, like, angle the dresser or the bed.
Yeah.
So from your perspective, what was that like? I'm some weird ass dude you've never met, who's just, like, manically, like, oh, I'm here, and I'm going to fucking do this thing, and I got to figure it out. And, like, you're probably like, what the fuck?
Slightly, but you were very nice.
Okay, well, that's good.
And I feel like you maybe saw my Doctor Who ornaments, maybe, on my bookshelf, and you might have brought up that you like Doctor Who.
I did. I do remember that. You have the red Dalek and the blue glass TARDIS. Yeah. I think we have the TARDIS. I don't think we have the Dalek, but yeah. I do remember that. That's awesome. Yeah, so it was cool because that was, like, the spark of our getting to know each other friendship. And we kind of didn't collaborate or anything until a little further down the road. It was more into, like, the August, September months of last year.
That was the first time we ever did Foodies.
Yeah, and all of those things and the circumstances around that. We had hung out a couple times in between there, though, right? I think Fia had invited you over maybe one time before then, something like that. So we had kind of known each other, but I think from that interaction, I was like, well, she knows what the fuck she's talking about movies, and we're gonna, like, relaunch this show. Like, let's have her as a guest. And you did the first episode, and I was like, man, she's fucking so much fun. Let's just keep her around as much as possible. So I was, like, in the group going, okay, well, what if we, like, because I didn't want to, like, piss anybody off. You know how it is. So I'm like, okay, AP, I love you and all, but you have even told me that you're gonna miss some episodes. So if you're going to miss an episode, we'll just bring Lauren and we'll just have you guys split duty. And it never worked out that way. Sometimes you have been there when he hasn't and vice versa.
Yeah.
But we like to all be together because there's just a fun kind of energy that goes into the doing the show.
The four of us work well together.
Yeah. It's really strange because I don't think when you met me, I knew all about podcasting. It was my whole world at that point. and it still is. But I don't think you knew it was going to like come into your life at all.
No.
And now here you are doing a podcast.
Yep.
That's crazy, huh?
Yeah.
Do you like podcasting?
I really do.
Well,
I really like having an outlet to discuss like some of my favorite things.
And your thoughts.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to let them bubble and fester. And sometimes you're at work and the person next to you doesn't know what the fuck Doctor Who is. They don't want to hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, I really want to talk about my theory on the 12th Doctor and how he's the greatest. Maybe not, but I digress. So I want to kick it back to like the very beginning. We're going to kind of, we'll link these stories back in together and kind of intertwine everything. But where are you born? Where are you from? Is Northwest Indiana always been home?
I was born in Munster. I grew up in Griffith. I went to St. Mary's for preschool through fourth grade. And then in fifth grade, I went to Franklin. I wasn't at school at all in sixth grade because I was sick. I had cancer when I was 12.
Man.
In my left hip. Yep. And then I went back to school at St. Mary's for 7th and 8th grade. I went to Griffith for the first 5 weeks of high school. Then I transferred to Lowell because I didn't like Griffith.
I can see that.
I didn't like the people at Griffith very much. And my mom was just frustrating me just because my sisters walked all over her. My mom let that happen. And that was really frustrating for me to
watch.
You're
the youngest?
I'm the oldest.
Oh, you're the oldest.
Yeah.
Oh, so you're watching, as you're getting out of high school and stuff, your younger siblings just
I'm going into high school.
Oh, you're going into high school, and they already have full reign.
I mean, not my youngest sister, Hannah. She was always kind of maybe just a little bit more sheltered, a little more spoiled than me and Emily. But Emily, my middle sister, she was born in 1992. I was born in 90. Hannah was born in 95. Emily has always been difficult. Not only for my mom and for my dad, but for me and for Hannah as well.
She's kind of the unintentional black sheep. She kind of has her own path she's carved.
Yeah.
And she definitely goes against the grain and doesn't give a fuck what anybody else thinks about that.
No. I mean, I'm kind of like that in some respects, but
I think you have a kind of the right to have that mentality, though.
Yeah.
I mean, and we're going to definitely, hopefully, if you're okay with this, dive into this. So life before sixth grade is just you're growing up, living your normal thing. You're into like dancing and sports and stuff.
Yeah. I played volleyball. I played softball growing up.
Awesome.
I was in dance class or dance club at St. Mary's when I was like in like second or third grade. Yeah. So I was able to, I mean, I remember running outside at recess and like me and my best friend Val, who now lives in Seattle. We'll get to that later. But we used to play Buffy at recess. I was always Buffy because I was blonde.
That's awesome.
She was always Willow because she was like this scrawny little pale redheaded kid.
That's perfect.
And believe it or not, I was stronger growing up. Like I was the stronger one out of the two of us. And now she plays rugby and she could kick my ass if she wanted to.
She became like this badass.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. Well, we'll get to her journey in a minute. So you're doing all these normal things. I guess the best thing to ask right out of the gate is like, what happened? What's the lead in to finding out you were sick? Was there any big thing that happened that kind of was an event that led to the moment where you had to go to the doctor and they go, something is definitely wrong?
It's time for Brews with Dudes. Ah, juicy.
Hello there, and welcome to another episode of Brews with Dudes. I'm your host, Nick Maxson, sitting down here once again at the North End Pub, joined once again by Casey. How are you doing, Casey?
Doing well. A little hot, but doing well.
Just a little bit hot. The AC unit went out, so we're all sweating a little bit. We're also down here with Neil from Matt Anthony Brewing. How are you doing?
I'm living the dream and hope I never wake up. That's what's happening with me.
Good. That's a good way to be looking at it. So we're doing another one of our tap takeovers down here tonight with Matt Anthony Brewing Company. Neil was nice enough to come down and hang out with us for the evening. So before we let Neil get into all the fun stuff that I'm sure he's going to share with us, let's start sipping on one of these beers. What are we going to start with?
I'd like to start you off with the Summer Days Wheat. This is our favorite summer seasonal.
All right.
It's American Wheat Ale with orange peel, coriander, and local honey from Reckwig, which is a local honey farm just south of Fort Wayne in Decatur.
Mm. That's tasty.
Well, thank
you.
I get the honey. Yeah.
It's got a nice nice golden color.
Helps to finish it off just a little bit drier, but not too overly sweet with that orange peel. And yeah, just a nice citrusy, hypnotic brew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm liking the can. It's got a very summery vibe.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. We've been having great success with this in the Fort Wayne area. Summer Days cans can be found around the Folinger Outdoor Theaters and Embassy, which is our local local big theater that's been around for many years, as well as the Tin Caps for minor league baseball. So yeah, it's been a favorite.
Locally carries them. I swear, I was just at Barberry Liquors and they had them.
That's right. Yeah, Barberry Liquors, so, Village Bottle Shop. Yep. And as well as Draft here at this fine establishment that we're at here today. Yes, yeah, Market Pub. Yeah,
12 IBUs. Not bitter at all. Really. 5.4 ABV.
Mm-hmm.
I'm digging it. This is what we like to call crushable. You could definitely just smash these on a hot summer day.
Yes, sir. Yep. No, that's why we so Matt Anthony, most of our packages in 12-ounce glass bottles. We find that's what the Fort Wayne market is still going for these days. But in summer, we really crank out the aluminum cans, just because. Up in our area, and I'm sure down here in Lafayette as well, if you got a lot of folks that are down on the rivers, going to the state and county parks, glass is not a welcome visitor for those places. So, you know, aluminum is kind of a little bit more recyclable and safer to go to those places. So
you guys have a canning line and a bottling line.
So actually, we own our own bottling line, but we go through a mobile canning company called iCan out of Logansport.
Cool.
Yeah. So Luke he's been our local Indiana guy, and he brings the canning line to us, which is really helpful.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what? How big is your guys' system that you brew on?
So Matt Anthony's been around since 1998. So we are celebrating our 20th anniversary this year. About the ninth brewery to open up in the modern era in the state of Indiana. Yeah, it's and now I think we're up to about 150 something.
Yes,
to
it's
that.
Huge. It's huge now.
So it's great. It's great to see all these great Indiana local guys, especially in the Fort Wayne area. We were the only game in town since 1998 until about 2005. There are a few breweries that came and went up until about 2013, and then we started having. Like Summit City and Bird Boy and Trouble and Junk Ditch and all sorts of and there you go, Trouble Hat, all sorts of great breweries that came to town, and it's been great for the community and getting Fort Wayne more on the craft beer kick.
Absolutely. We were just up that way last weekend for Summit City's, was it 3-year, 4-year?
Yeah, the Boozapalooza.
Boozapalooza.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dave and Will been doing great work, and we love collaborating with them on events around town. So
they got a super cool spot.
Yeah.
I really like that spot.
Yeah. The old Bun Taffy Factory is where they were set up. So that's what we love about the craft beer industry. I know I'm on another tangent already here, but
we're all about tangents. We're all about tangents.
But with the craft beer industry, it seems like you don't often get the fresh build out. You always have somebody that has taken over a space that has been around for many years. So Matt Anthony was originally the Munchie Emporium restaurant back in 1998. And before that, I think it was a pharmacy. It was like a furniture store. It had been several other concepts before that, all the way back to the 20s when that building was first built. So in 1998, and this is going to lead to how many barrels we do.
There we go.
well, we'll get back to the question. But so Todd Grantham and Blaine Stuckey, they actually rented out a space inside the Munchie Emporium restaurant, where they started a 7-barrel batch system. From that point, they actually brewed beer inside somebody else's restaurant. When the restaurant went up for sale, they purchased the restaurant around them, and it became Matt Anthony Brewing.
Cool.
So a couple of years later, they started opening up a couple other brew pubs around Northeast Indiana. So we currently have locations in Auburn, Warsaw, Angola, and we have two barbecue restaurants called Shigs and Pit Barbecue and Brew. So really award-winning barbecue and Matt Anthony beer sold there as well.
That's awesome.
A production brewery was opened up a couple years after 1998 to help make sure that we had enough beer for all these locations plus statewide distribution. So we have a 15-barrel batch system in the production brewery, and the seven-barrel, the original seven-barrel system, is still used today for pilot batch, if you will. I mean, it's a big pilot batch, but for, you know, for four brew pub concepts plus two barbecue restaurants,
right?
You know, if you do seven barrels, 14 half barrels goes very quickly amongst those restaurants, and it's a great way for us to try new styles and to get great customer feedback before we torture the rest of the state with what we're doing. So yeah, that's kind of how we've been kind of doing it since 1998. Yeah,
awesome, very cool. Well, I've kind of been sneaking ahead, going on to the Ruby Raspberry Wheat.
Ruby Raspberry Wheat, yes.
So what do you got to say about this one?
So this is another refreshing American wheat ale. This is brewed with pureed Oregon raspberries. And this actually won the gold medal at the Great American Beer Festival in Denver in 2013 for best fruited American wheat. Yeah.
This was the one when we went to the Cavalier thing that kind of stood out. Like, yeah, when we went around sampling. Mm-hmm. We went to Mad Anthony, like, third or fourth, but this was one of the beers that for sure at the end of the night I was like, I'm ordering that tomorrow.
Yeah,
it's really good. It's got a more full mouth feel than I would expect from something I want to say this tart.
Yeah. And a lot of the taste profile from this is that you know, when it came to designing a fruited wheat ale, I mean, there's a lot of extract that goes around, but for us, it was keeping it the actual natural fruit flavor.
Awesome.
Trying not to go. And so whenever I would, you know, give this to folks like at festivals or at any tastings that we do, I have folks be like, I'm not really a fan of raspberry. And I go, yes, I know, but try it out anyway, because this is an actual, it tastes like an actual raspberry. It's not going to be like Robitussin or, you know, that overly cloyingly sweet flavor that I think a lot of people are afraid of. So, it's been a fan favorite. It's a year round for us up there for our pubs. And especially with the brew pubs, it's good to have, you know, something light, something hoppy, something dark, that has a little bit more of a fruit flavor to kind of win over the folks that, you know, hey, I'm not a beer fan. That's cool. You like wines. You like things that are a little sweeter. Ruby Raspberry is a good entry level beer, you know, for a lot of folks.
One thing I do like about your guys' beers, and we talked about this earlier, was the flavor of it doesn't completely punch you in the face.
Mm-hmm.
It's got like a sensible taste of what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
You know, where it's not overly tart or in your face raspberry. You get a good, nice taste to it. Plus, again, cool can.
Oh yeah,
which always matters.
Yeah, it looks
always
like,
matters.
Looks like diamond raspberries. Ruby. Or damn
raspberry.
It,